you really just start feeling the energy circle around you. And it's kind of starts off as like this vibration, but it's in the entire head. It's almost like a, if you picture your head as a light bulb, the energy's being produced in all directions and scattered in all directions. But what happened to me was all of a sudden, this light bulb sensation of where the energy's going all around, it went from light bulb to laser. And by that, I mean like all of the energy was condensed and felt in a singular point. And where was that singular point? Right here in between the two eyes. And I was like, wow, this is what everybody is referring to as the third eye.
Sweet. We are rolling. All right, friends. Thank you so much for coming back to join me for another episode of the Ben Werman podcast. Appreciate you being here. Today, we have my friend Dan Gerke, who I swear I'm gonna get through the whole episode without doxing his name. Peruvian bull and I in Colombia, when we were traveling there, we met Dan, and Dan is the one who told us about this gateway experience that those of you who listened to my episode with Peruvian Bull, my most recent one, it was 90 something. He talked about this gateway experience he did where he listened to these interesting meditation guidance tapes, and they really changed the way that your brain works in a lot of really crazy ways. And that's what we're going to talk about today. So, Dan, really appreciate you coming by, man. It's great to chat with you again.
Love to be here. Yeah, good to be here, man.
So, why don't we start things off with just some backstory from you on where you came from that brought you to this really interesting topic of exploring these different levels of human consciousness? How did that start for you?
Well, I think of, like most people, we always have a sort of spark or curiosity and things spiritual. It's very hard to kind of kindle that. And, long time ago, maybe 5 years ago, maybe less, I saw this YouTube video, and it was about these CIA declassified documents and how there was like psychic spies and things like that, spying on the Russians. I was like, what the heck is this? And that kind of sparked my initial curiosity. And it was all about these binaural beats and kind of the synthesis between, how we can use elements in the physical world like sound to kind of project ourselves into these altered states of consciousness. So I kind of experimented with it a little bit. At the time, I was working in a emerald mine in the middle of the jungle. So I didn't really have any, ironically, peace and quiet to do it well. So like my initial time, I only did it for like 10 days, but always had like this anxiety that somebody was going to bang on my door, so I never really could get too deep. And then when that contract ended, I kind of maybe saw another video in my algorithm. I was like, oh, let me try give this a shot again. And that's when I really went deep into it. Basically, after about the third day of doing it, I felt this, the first day you feel this very pleasant sensation, because it's so new and so different. But then the third day is when I really was like, wow, this is something. And it was just like this jolt of energy I felt, and that kind of propelled me to continue on. And I ended up doing it for about 70 days in a row. I just kind of documented my progression there and went from a kind of a pretty much a hardline skeptic in all things, energy, Kundalini chakra, these type of things, third eye, to like 100% believe in it now. Just firsthand experience. So,
I'm curious what those things really are, because when I hear Kundalini chakra, third eye, like as a normie, I don't really know what those things mean in the true sense. So could you walk through a little bit about what those actually mean to you, what you've learned that they mean?
right. So when you look up these terms, you'll be bombarded in kind of mystical speech. But what I've kind of My understanding of is a little different. So in the physical realm, you know, everything spiritual is reflected in the physical. We have this spinal fluid, and it starts at the base of our spine, which, you know, is the root chakra, as they say. And then it can rise all the way to the crown chakra. But right before it does that, it hits, I forget what this chakra is called, but it doesn't even matter. Essentially, it's a spinal fluid that comes up and it hits your pineal gland. And when it hits it, it's almost like you're awakening a muscle that was atrophied. So it's like if you ever started going to the gym for the first time, you never lifted weights before, some of the muscles are going to feel sore or whatever, but you keep going, keep training, and eventually, you know, you'll be able to like flex muscles that you couldn't flex before. So it's almost like that. Like when you start doing these meditations, it's almost like you're exercising the rise of the spinal fluid. And I think that's what that energy is. You're just basically, it's like activating the pump to pump the fluid up. And then eventually, once it hits this part, the pineal gland, it awakens. That's my understanding of it.
Okay. And I'm just going to keep asking these super beginner questions because I know there are a lot of people out there. This is like a totally new topic for the podcast. So could you explain what the pineal gland actually is for people that don't know?
It's like this very small gland that exists in the base of the brain, like the center of the brain. It controls, I think it's activated a lot when you're sleeping, like in REM sleep. I believe it has serotonin. That's where it's released from the pineal gland. And when people talk about the third eye, they're talking about the pineal gland. So essentially when it's activated, you feel this more, you feel a heightened sense of intuition and perception. Carl Jung used to call these synchronicities, just kind of things start happening, falling into place. Also to quote Carl Jung, once this is kind of activated, well, he didn't say this, but when he was asked, you know, do you believe in God? He said, no, I know God. And so when this is kind of activated, this heightened sense of intuition, one can argue, well, I can at least, that it's true. Like you have a very deeper spiritual sense and connection once this is activated.
That's super interesting because this is something that, and maybe I could provide a little more background on how we even met, because when Peruvian Bull and I were traveling together in Colombia, we talked about this sort of stuff all the time, these really deep conversations just as we were eating our steak in whatever hostel we were staying at. And at the time, we were sort of on the same page that we kind of felt like religion and God and these ideas were sort of, I guess, really like huge elaboration on stories, essentially. And there wasn't really like hard truth to them. And I would never call myself an atheist because I just think that it's too complicated of a topic to say like this doesn't exist. I think that atheism is stupid, but I sort of consider myself agnostic, where I just don't know. I've never seen any proof of it, and I'm really like a proof person. I like to verify things, and it's one of those things that's hard to verify. So I was kind of like, I don't know. And Peruvian Bull is on the same page with me, and for the most part, we sort of agreed on that. But when we met you, and it was funny, for just a little story for the listeners, we met through a mutual friend and went whitewater rafting in Medellin, just outside of the city, which was super fun and just a great bonding experience with four dudes. And you were talking about these gateway tapes to Peruvian Bull, and he immediately resonated with it because he's had some really interesting experiences in his life that where his brain was just, you know, coming up with these visions of things that ended up happening in the future, and he was just confused, and he had this connection with his mom where she would like understand, and if he could be on the other side of the world going through an experience and she would know it, like he would call her and she would like know that he was going through pain or happiness. And so he was basically very primed for this, and he, as soon as you started talking about it, he connected with it quickly. I was kind of like, oh, that's interesting, I'm going to keep rafting. But so he picked it up and ran with it. And something that he talked about after this, the next time we visited several months later, after we went home and sort of split for a while, was that he completely changed his feelings on God. And just like you talked about, I don't know where you were before you started doing this, but he came to me and said, like, there is definitely a God now. I know this, and I feel connected with God. And I thought that was really fascinating. It really changed his way of thinking. And the fact that him and you both had a similar experience with that is super fascinating to me. Is that pretty much what you had as well? Did you have sort of a sequence of events that led you to that realization, or were you always in that camp?
No, that's a great question. I would say, you know, like most kids growing up in the secular society that we live in now, for the most part, you always kind of want to believe, but it's just so hard to do. It's just so hard to do. But I think the first experience I ever had where it's kind of just like, whoa, what is this? Was I was in San Jose del Pacifico, which is like this cloud forest in the middle of the Mexican mountains in the state of Oaxaca. And they're famous for these super potent psilocybin mushrooms.
I heard of those. When I was in Oaxaca, I thought about going there, and I may still do it someday. It sounds really interesting.
It was an incredible time. There's these guides there, and you just go on a little hike, and there's so many mushrooms because it's a cloud forest. And he basically just says, if you see a mushroom, just point it out. I'll tell you if it's magic or not. And so we went on our little hike in the morning. We picked them. And then the following day, like on an empty stomach and all this, and, you know, me and my friends took them. And it was just like, it was such a great night because despite being a cloud forest that night, it was crystal clear. And again, it's on top of the mountain in the middle of nowhere. It's like the heavens opened up and you could just feel like this intense energy permeating through the ether. And that was like my first glimpse at like a heightened understanding of like who we are as human beings. You know, we're humans, but we're also beings, right? Beings of light and energy. So that was like the first kindling in the fire. But yeah, like doing the gateway, you know, no drugs, none of that. You don't have to. Essentially, just to dive back into how the gateway works, it's like, you know, we all have like brain signatures in different states. I think it's alpha, gamma, beta, delta, something like that. I'm not too big on the sciences, but basically there's different signatures our brain has. And that's like the little scans you see, you know, plain view with the different colors and things. And so what the binaural beats do is they kind of shortcut the progression into like transcendental meditation. So it's almost like providing you the same signature through the binaural beats, brain signature, that a person who's been practicing 20 years of transcendental meditation daily gets to experience. You get to experience it in probably under a week of practice just by using these tapes. But yeah, it was a little bit of a tangent. So
I guess we didn't really give like a super general overview of what the gateway tapes are. You know, like what are these gateway tapes that we've talked about? I know that the Monroe Institute is involved and this guy basically created these tapes. I don't know the history of it super well, but it basically helped. Why don't you just take it from there? What are these tapes? Where did they come from?
So yeah, there's a guy named Dr. Robert Monroe who was a radio broadcaster, and I believe the 70s out of New York, and he had, you know, like audio studio, and I think he was basically messing around with these sounds. And he had an outer body experience, and he went on to write a few books, but he was like, how did that happen? And so he got some professional sound engineers, and they kind of reverse engineered the process to have these out of body experiences. And he kind of like me wasn't really into like the, you know, mystical, like religious Hindu, whatever, in terms of meditation. He just wanted to scientifically kind of see how these states can be provoked within us. And I think during the course of making the Gateway tapes himself, he became a spiritual person, if he wasn't already with his out-of-body experiences. But essentially, these tapes start you off, you know, very beginner. It's kind of weird at first, but the first time you do it, you'll feel like a sense of peace. I've never met anybody who didn't feel a sense of peace. And the reason I like him is, you know, anybody who's kind of interested in spiritual things, of course, they go to YouTube and type in guided meditation, something like that. But I've never found one on YouTube that was effective. And these tapes are quite effective just because they are like scientifically engineered to provoke these states. And essentially, you progress through the tapes, and if you go through all the waves, you essentially, you know, are able to remote view, astral project your body. Remote viewing is basically being able to perceive things on the other side of the world, or even the universe, just from our own body. And yeah, like you just start off the tape slow, take your time, and eventually by about wave two, so there's I think like five or six different tapes per wave. So by about wave two, which usually will take 20 days to get to, you'll really start to notice the difference in your everyday life, as well as the quality of your meditations, how deep you can go.
Awesome. So I'd love to go back to your story now, because you like the stories that you've told me personally of the things that you started experiencing were wild to me. So I'd love to hear what things started happening to you that really, you know, pricked your ears up thinking like, wow, this is actually real. This is happening. And how soon did that happen for you?
Yeah, sure. So, you know, like day one was like the first exposure. I noticed an unusually deep sense of relaxation, and I was like, okay, this is cool. And then, you know, by day three to day seven, I started the advanced focus 10. So that in the Gateway, there's these different focus levels, and you can consider them just different binaural beat frequencies that produce different brain signatures. So focus 10 is the first one that you'll get to. And advanced focus 10 is just basically the extension of time that you're in the focus 10 state. And in wave one, there's a tape where you go out of the body. And so day eight is when I had my first out of body experience, which scared the hell out of me, so I decided to keep going. Basically, it's almost like you leave the body, you can see yourself, but everything kind of looks the same as if you were swimming underwater. It's very blurry, but you can see all your surroundings. Day 13 is like the first day I did the focus 12, which is the progression from focus 10. You get to focus 12, and you notice a shift between the two states. Like focus 12 is more of like an expanded sense of awareness, as well as like your visualization capacity is increased. And the whole time you're just like, you know, your body is super relaxed, and the meditations kind of fly by. And you just kind of wake up out of it. And then, you know, I'd say about day 10 is when you really just start feeling the energy circle around you. And it's kind of starts off as like this vibration, but it's in the entire head. It's almost like a, if you picture your brain as like your head as a light bulb, the energy's being produced in all directions and scattered in all directions. But what happened to me on day 24 of it was all of a sudden, this light bulb sensation of where the energy is going all around. And it's a physical sensation. You actually feel it, like the energy come up and dissipate. So day 24 is when it went from light bulb to laser. And by that, I mean like all of the energy was condensed and felt in a singular point. And where was that singular point? Right here in between the two eyes. And I was like, wow, this is what, you know, everybody is referring to as the third eye. And then essentially every time I would meditate, I would continuously get that sensation, but only during meditation. And then a week later on day 31 is when basically the sensation never left. Even as soon as I would wake up, I would begin to feel it all the way until I went to bed. And then certain things started happening throughout the day. So there's this park I always used to walk at every morning. And at the park, there's a little like pond, you could call it. And the pond was just full of little goldfish like this, but it had some koi fish that were carp that were hidden because they had the same complexion as the muddy water. But what I noticed was, it's like if you ever played that game Hot Cold, where if you're close to looking and finding the object, people will say hot. If you're further away from finding it, it'll be cold. What I noticed was, is this sensation in my third eye location, everywhere I would move, it would dissipate or it would increase. And it, when it was super intense, there was the fish, and that would happen daily. Other things similar to that.
Just what do you mean by there was the fish? Like the fish like followed you or something?
It was just like right in front of my eyes. So like I would be looking around and, you know, the sensation, the tingling sensation in my head, my third eye location would be less intense if I wasn't, I guess, near looking at the fish. But then as I would move towards the direction of fish, now keep in mind I didn't know where it was, it would increase until the point where it was super intense and I would look and there would the fish would be. Other things would happen, like I would be watching a YouTube video or listening to someone talk, and you could kind of just get a better sense if they're telling the truth or not, or if they're full of it or not. These types of, you could call it intuition, activities of the brain were definitely heightened in terms of just perceiving objects and also, just perception of people in general. So yeah, it's pretty neat. And then, yeah, like, after you do the tapes probably 2 weeks in a row, you really start to realize that, you know, we are more than just physical bodies. We're energy. And because we're energy, we're able to expand our energy into different, I guess you could call them dimensions, but call them realms, different names for it. But essentially, if you want to keep it simple, just states of being.
So I'm curious about, how much have you spoken with other people who've gone through this experience, and have you heard that these time frames you're setting are fairly common, or is it pretty rare to get to that level in just a couple of weeks? Because that seems super fast.
That's a great question. I mean, speaking to Peruvian Bull, you know, everybody kind of takes their own pace at the tapes, which is highly recommended. You know, you don't want to just do a tape a day and keep progressing, because you won't grasp the full intention that the tape is supposed to provide you. So if you're starting out, take your time and only progress when you intuitively feel that you should. So like speaking to Peruvian Bull, it was pretty similar with his experience, I believe, you know, a couple weeks and you definitely start noticing the effects. any more time after that, the synchronicities of your life, which essentially can be defined as the coincidences that start to happen in your life, start to increase and become like too strange to be coincidences. Because essentially what you're doing is you're spreading your intentions out in these heightened states of awareness. Your energy is more focused and intense. So you're spreading these energy waves out to then get back which you, your subconscious or your soul really wants. Yeah.
So part of the reason why I asked that is because just from my own experience. So since doing that podcast with Peruvian Bull, the more recent one, I've had quite a bit of traveling chaos going on. So I haven't been 100% consistent, which you need to be if you really want to do this. So just for clarity, I haven't been perfect, but I have done it maybe like an average of every other day I've had time to do it. But I'm such a perfectionist that I can just, as I'm going through it and I look back on it, I feel like I didn't feel like I was on that super deep level that I keep hearing about. And something that Peruvian Bull told me was, you know, keep doing the focus 10, advanced focus 10 until you really feel like you are in that purgatory state. And you really feel like you are, like, as the narrator in the tape says, that you are, your body is asleep, but your mind is awake. So what do you think for people like me? Like, I have such a busy brain all the time. I find myself just, I did it yesterday, was I did one of the tapes, and I'm doing the advanced focus 10 sort of over and over until I get that one. And I just have a hard time turning the brain off. And I knew this would be a difficult thing. Do you have any tips for people like that who are having a difficult time really sort of locking in to the instructions of the tape, where you're supposed to, you open the energy conversion box and visualize the energy field around you and these different things that people will hear. I find myself, my mind is wandering a lot. So do you have any tips for people to have that happen?
Yeah, for sure. I think the timing where you do the tapes is important. For me personally, I do it before I eat, like even before you brush your teeth or take a shower for the day, because you want to do it.
So first thing in the morning, basically.
First thing in the morning.
Okay.
Yeah, because if you do it, then your brain is still in kind of like a state where it's waking up. I think it's the delta wave state. And so it's easier to get into those altered states at that level, because if you do it at the end of the day, which is still fine, but if you're starting out, I would definitely do it at the beginning of the day, because it's easier to manipulate your brain states. It's easier to get in those altered states if you're just coming out of a dream state and you have nothing imprinted on your subconscious for the day. You won't have as many, like these anxious little thoughts and things like that. So it's a lot easier to control if you do it first thing in the morning.
I think that's a really good tip. And that's what I was doing for most of the time, was it was before bed. It was right before bed when I was already really sleepy. And I would also be sort of falling asleep as I was doing it. So I think that that's probably not what you're going for.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes if, like, for me personally, for example, I've also tried the tapes lying down. And if I do that, I tend to fall asleep more often than not. So I always try to just do it sitting up in like a comfortable chair. That way, too, your body is more in a vertical, so you can visualize, and your feet are planted on the ground. So I do it barefoot as well, so just more grounded sensation. Whether that's psychosomatic or not, for all intents and purposes, it's one and the same in this case. So like have a vertical, and so the spine is vertical, and so you can kind of more visualize the energy rising up, versus if you're horizontal, it's a little more, for me at least, difficult to visualize the energy coming through a horizontal way.
I feel the exact same way. And it's really interesting you say that, because I've only done them laying down. This is another thing I'm going to try now. These are great tips, because one of the tasks that the narrator gives you is to visualize the field around, like the bubble around you. And it seems like such a simple thing. Like, of course I can visualize that, but when you're really trying to think about it hard, it is a little bit weird. I try to think like, how do I visualize this? Do I visualize myself looking in the mirror and seeing myself, or do I just visualize this like around my bed? And it's kind of more difficult to have that. So I think I'm really going to try it sitting up. I haven't tried that yet. So it makes sense. Do you think there's any scientific reason for that as well, with the spinal fluid, as you talked about, can move more freely when you're in upright position?
I would say so, yeah, because I mean, if you think about it, if you're in a vertical position, that pumping mechanism to move the fluid has to exercise more, just because it's fighting gravity at that point. So it probably is a more of a workout for it, so to speak. So if you can do it sitting up, eventually, yeah, you can do the tapes lying down or whatever. But I think if you do it sitting up, it's just better. I mean, if you look at anybody in the transcendental meditation space, they're not meditating lying down. They're always kind of in a lotus position. So since, you know, focus 10 and focus 12 are getting you to that space, that altered state, just basically identical, as far as I know, it just makes sense to kind of be in the same position as these transcendental meditation practitioners.
That's so true. I never even thought of it that way. Like when you just think of your stereotypical meditation practice, they're sitting up.
Always.
That's very interesting. Okay. Yeah. These are all great tips. I'm going to try, because I really need to lock into this and do it, because it's so fascinating. And there are definitely other accounts out there. People can look around on YouTube. I made a little YouTube series of other people who have similar experiences. I mean, I have to imagine there's going to be just a huge range of outcomes from this, because everyone's brain is very different. But I mean, the fact that there are so many people out there that have had it is just fascinating to me, and it means it should definitely be worth a try for everyone to see how you feel. And I would say the worst case scenario is it's just a very relaxing, you know, way to start your day. 30 minutes. Most of the tapes are around 30 minutes or so. And it's just, there's nothing that bad that can happen from it. It's just, you might as well try it.
Yeah, I agree. I think there are some skeptics out there that, or not skeptics, people who are kind of fearful, right? Fearful of the unknown. And really what it is the inability to let go of the ego and control. But if you do want to kind of reach these altered states, you do have to let go of the ego. I mean, in all religions, Christianity, the one being I know, you're supposed to destroy your ego in order to reach these heightened states. In Buddhism, same thing. To reach enlightenment, nirvana, whatever, you have to deny oneself. So if you look at all the spiritual masters throughout the decades or millennia, they've all had to basically destroy their ego. And when you do that, you separate your spirit from yourself. And so you're able to kind of explore the spiritual world.
And it's funny you mentioned that, because this has been something that I have always struggled with, is just, I've never been comfortable letting go and just letting things happen. I always like feel like I need to be in control of everything. And one of the classic ways that people get through that is psychedelics, mushrooms. I'm in Costa Rica right now, and mushrooms are illegal here. So I just grabbed some, and I'm going to try out a little 3-gram trip at some point and, you know, start working on this, because maybe that could also be one of the reasons why I am not able to, you know, do these tapes and like completely just surrender to it. I think that maybe there are people out there with a similar case where they just sort of have that blockage of needing to feel like you're in control subconsciously. And who knows where that comes from, but I imagine that has to be fairly common among people these days, because everyone's sort of in an anxious state all the time. And I don't consider myself an anxious person, but you know, deep down, when you go that deep into your brain, you're going to find it at some point, I think, for most people.
Yeah, 100%. And I think too, like, the use of these psychedelics is more of like a tool, as a shortcut to give you a jolt of consciousness. But if you become kind of dependent on it, so for example, say you do this, say a person does mushrooms or something, they have a great experience, but they don't continuously meditate and reflect and try to find it themselves in a sober state, they'll start to use the psychedelics as a crutch, as the only way to access these heightened states, when in reality you don't need it. It's just more of a tool to kind of to showcase and show you, but it's careful not to become dependent on them to reach the states.
Yeah, and I think that is a great point, is the fact that these, I think drugs in general, people need to look at them as a very intentional tool to get you to a certain place and not ever let it become a habit or something that you need to get to a certain place. And it's just as you're talking about how the gateway tapes have the binaural beats, the frequency, the hemisync, as they call it, which is just for people's understanding. It's playing a different, slightly different frequency in each ear, which sort of brings the brain hemispheres together in an interesting way that gives you a little bit of a boost toward reaching these levels of consciousness. And I think the same way for psychedelics, it can boost you a little bit, but you need to use that boost and keep going yourself. You need to put in the work outside. And because I've become pretty convinced by talking to Peruvian Bull, who's also very, very big on mushrooms in general. He thinks that they have a lot of very positive effects if you use them correctly and can open up new neural pathways for you. So that's sort of what I'm looking at as is an interesting way to sort of get a little bit of a kickstart. If you have some gunk clogged up in the brain, you know, that's subconscious. And that's what I'm going to look into it for. And I'm curious, like, do you think that for other people who have been curious about trying psychedelics, that could be, is my line of reasoning pretty correct there, that it could help sort of get things moving a little bit if they're maybe a little stuck?
Yeah, 100%. And you know, the set and setting are very crucial to that. You know, you want to do it with an intention. You almost kind of want to ceremonialize it in a way, because you know, sometimes, say if you did an eighth of shrooms at a music festival, you're just going to have a good time. You're not really going to, you know, find any gunk or whatever. But if you do it, you know, nice environment in nature, very peaceful, no distracting noises, no one saying, bro, you tripping, you know, none of that. I think it can be a tool used to give you that jolt of consciousness to kind of at least kindle that spark of spirituality a little bit.
And I'll even take it further. When, you know, Peruvian Bull told me that for him, what he believes, and I've talked to other people as I've, you know, been exploring this and studying it, is you want to cover your eyes, because your eyes are a huge, you know, intake pathway of information. And when your eyes are open, you're just consuming all of the stimuli everywhere. When you cover your eyes, the mushroom really, really wake your brain up, and then they force your brain into this, you know, creating this whole world that you aren't seeing visually. And so that was sort of his big realization. And that's all he does now, is only laying down, eyes covered, and just like some relaxing music at the most for stimulation. Some people even say you should not have any sound either, like full sensory deprivation. And they find that is where they really get the most benefits. So it's all very interesting. And I'm a total newbie, of course. I haven't even done this yet. I did do shrooms a couple of times over the years, I think two or three times total, but it was not very much. And it was just out with friends, you know, at a music festival, out watching the shooting stars, going for a hike, stuff like that. You know, when I was in Colombia, actually, we did it there in Parque Arví. It was, you know, a super chill hiking day. We took them and just walked around, and it was very light rain, just pitter pattering on all the leaves and all the flowers, and some dogs were running around. It was just a beautiful day, but it wasn't really looking inward, like you said. Like, you kind of have to choose if you want to have an outward experience or an inward experience. And I've never done the inward kind. So very interested in seeing how it goes.
Yeah, for sure. I think most people's first experience should be an outward experience in a nice setting in nature, just to get accustomed to it. But, you know, eventually, if you do want to have that intention to go within, you know, go for it. But yeah, I think originally an outward experience would be better just to get your mind accustomed to it. Because if you go right off the bat, close your eyes, total sensory deprivation, you might go a little, what the heck is going on? So,
yeah, well, maybe a little too much for a lot of people. And I do hear some people say there's no such thing as a bad trip. It's just a really hard one you need to go through. But I don't know. I wouldn't recommend starting with that either. And we'll see how it goes for me. I'm not even sure. It'll be interesting. But one of the questions I wanted to bring to your attention here, that this is one of the things that Peruvian Bull and I talked at the end of our episode, and we sort of touched on it there, was when you look at religion today, just how it is generally done around the world compared to when we look at these old buildings, these old world buildings that just have like these cathedrals that are just sky high, cymatics designed to have these certain frequency patterns resonate through it. Everything, you know, when you look at that and think this is where people used to practice religion, they were using the power of frequency. And who knows what sort of technology they had to do this. I am definitely a subscriber of the idea that there was an old world Tartaria, whatever you want to call it, where there was a far more advanced civilization that was far more connected to all of these senses and frequencies and our inner power than we are now. And just looking at what we have today, you know, just like everything else, the churches are like these little white boxes and no one's doing any of this stuff. They're just sort of reading some prayers out of a book and just, you know, do a little prayer before dinner. And that's kind of it. What are your thoughts on modern religion, Christianity, and versus the past? And what have we lost here that people could start looking at rekindling and bringing it back for the, reaching that inner power?
I would say people may not be aware of that, you know, there's the religion that's taught to the masses, but there's also the mystics, the saints. I'm talking about Christianity here, where, I mean, these guys would be hermits and just literally pray all day, which is basically meditation. So there's still mystical components of the religions that are still out there. And to explore those components, if you actually want to dive deep into a spiritual understanding of things, particularly in the Eastern Orthodox practice of Christianity, they still maintain a very strong mystical component in their liturgy, as well as the reverence of the ancient desert fathers and these things. Now, stemming back to your question about previous civilizations, I mean, if we look at the time span of humanity as a species, and we're under the interpretation that carbon dating is a reality, you know, we've been a species at least, what, 500,000 years, but we've only been able to go from hunter-gatherer to have civilizations in the last, what, 6,000? Doesn't really make a lot of sense. And then people will say, well, it's just because the Earth's been warm for this period of time. And if we look at the past, you know, 300,000-400,000 years, the Earth's been warm various times throughout the last 400,000 years to produce civilization. We know, in fact, that, you know, in ancient Egypt, it was actually before, like a temperate climate, you know, less before 12,000 years ago, it was a temperate climate. And people look at the Sphinx and, oh, there's water erosion marks. How could that happen in a desert? And yeah, I agree. Like, you know, we took our civilization in this route, which is producing technological marvels, but it's very, you know, cause and effect type of civilization that's kind of consciousness independent, where perhaps previous civilizations took their ideas in a different route and explored different frequencies and, or excuse me, different mentalities and ways of viewing the world. So it's all possible. You know, if you were to give somebody in maybe one of those previous civilizations an iPhone, they might be amazed in the same ways that perhaps we're amazed at what they were able to do. So it's just all about, I think, the different pathways that people take their civilizations towards.
Yeah, I would agree. And it's like the most interesting scavenger hunt ever, just going through these rabbit holes, the different remnants of the past. And at this point, I am completely convinced that we are just one of many cycles of history that just keep repeating. And like you said, these each cycle has a different path that people take over however many hundreds or thousands of years. And then some cataclysm wipes it out every time. We keep seeing that. I know a lot of people have watched Graham Hancock's work on Joe Rogan and his Netflix series and his books, talking about how he believed there was a super advanced civilization around 12 to 15,000 years ago, I think it was. And I'm also learning more about the Tartaria theory now, which supposedly the theory is that it went up until just a couple hundred years ago, up until the 19th century. And it was just completely wiped from the history books and just taken out with a mud flood. And so there's a lot of these interesting ideas out there. It's so fascinating because we see these things with our own eyes that don't make any sense. I mean, no one has an answer for the pyramids. And we just got new information about the pyramids in the last few weeks, showing that there are just these massive columns underneath them that go underground for like, you know, a quarter mile or something. And there's just no answer for how are these things created. So anyone trying to think that they know the truth about history and that what we're told about history is correct is just not looking hard enough, I don't think. And what we can do, I would say, and you probably agree, is that we can look at these remnants we have from all these past civilizations that were before us and try to pinpoint things that seem like they were really good things, healthy things, things that connect us to our deeper selves and connect us to nature and God, and try to find those again, because a lot of those things are not in this iteration of humanity. We are not connecting with a higher source. We're building these 5G towers everywhere that are cooking our cells. We're spraying aluminum in the sky. The water's being fluoridated, which literally calcifies your pineal gland. There's all the evil forces out there that are clearly trying to stop these things from happening. I mean, would you say I'm being too tinfoil hatty there? Or would you agree that it seems like there is a cohort that's trying to stop us from reconnecting with these really deep truths that we've already found before? We're just trying to refine.
Yeah, I think everything always stems back to money and power, and how, you know, if you look at people who are very ego driven, they want power, they want money, and they'll do things to maintain that. So, you know, you look back at ether used to be like solids, liquids, gases, plasma. Ether was like the fifth element. And then you look at Nikola Tesla being able to give free energy basically in the through the ionosphere, through the ether. They totally stripped that element out when we started becoming a petroleum-based energy society, because there's no money in it, right? So
it's really crazy when you think about it. And this is why I don't even know where you stand on Bitcoin, but this is why Peruvian Bull and I are so passionate about Bitcoin as a solution for that root problem, the money. The fact that we're in a fiat system with an infinite money printer, that just every time you look at one of these problems that we have where you just think, how the heck, you know, how do they even get the money for spraying chemicals in the sky and fluoridating the water and doing all these huge operations to just mass poison people? It always comes back to the fiat money printer and the ability to print unlimited paper currency that the government mandates. Back when we were on the gold standard, it forced responsibility onto people because you could only have a certain amount. And people figure out how to game that gold by clipping coins, diluting the metal and stuff like that. And so Bitcoin is like a new, better version of gold, in my opinion. And I think it could potentially really cut off those life forces to these crazy spending habits out there that are always bad. And once we force responsibility again, things will start to become more beautiful. And naturally, the insane among us as a species will just be priced out. Have you looked into Bitcoin at all? I don't even know if you've been in that rabbit hole.
Yeah, I mean, it makes sense to me. It's a more efficient way to transfer money. And, you know, because there's a finite amount of it, so the value is only going to go up with the demand. So, yeah.
It's good to have solutions out there and just reasons to have hope, because I know we talk about all these things, and especially when you look at the historical component, how in the past things were, in a lot of ways, you can just see that they were better, at least health-wise and connectedness-wise. And it's easy to get a little bit depressed and think, man, we're in a really dark place right now, where no one's connected, everyone's disconnected, people are just zombified, they cannot connect to these higher consciousness levels that we talked about today. And it's just good to have things that you can really latch onto and see that there is a path that this could bring hope back and bring these ancient understanding of how we work as a biological being back. And you can help on a societal level by pushing things like Bitcoin that will, you know, stop the mass poisoning of people, which is a suppressant on people's brains. And you could also do it on an individual level by reasons like we talked about today. The gateway tapes are a great one. And so I guess we could keep this episode fairly short, under an hour, I think, and start wrapping things up here. But why don't you share just any sorts of resources that you know of that people could start consuming to learn more about this? I know that you have a service that you can like offer to people where people can just talk to you about this. So share some links for us to help people learn more.
I would say if anybody's curious about the gateway, just look up on YouTube, you know, CIA declassified gateway. It's like three keywords. Kind of start educating yourself there. There's a pretty good book I recommend as well. It's called Chasing the Wild Pendulum by this guy named Bentoff, who mysteriously died in a plane accident. And then there's also, you can actually read the declassified CIA document where, you know, this army colonel in the 80s was essentially explaining how he thought the gateway process worked. It's super dense. And I believe there is a YouTube video that kind of describes it a little bit better, but I would just read it if it's something you're interested in. And, you know, if you want to talk more, you can chat with me. I think you'll provide the link, just a nice 30-minute session, you know, $50, and I'm all ears. I'd love to help you out on your journey, to anybody who's listening to this.
Amazing, man. Well, I really appreciate you swinging by. I know this is your first time I've ever done a podcast, so it's been a lot of fun. You did great. And I have my work cut out for me. There's some great tips in here. I need to go back and listen to this and refine my own process, because I think that there's so much here to explore. And like we said earlier, it's worth everyone giving it a try and looking into this stuff. It's just a fascinating rabbit hole to go into. So appreciate you so much for coming by, Dan. We'll look forward to keeping in touch and continuing to explore these crazy things with you.
It was great to be on here, Ben. I'm glad I did good for the first time being on a podcast. Great conversation, man. stay in touch for sure.